meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Shortcoat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews
by students for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
Welcome back to the Shortcoat Podcast. I'm Dave Etler. You know, despite the fact that I've been out of school for many years, I always look on summer as a break, even when I'm, you know, working. It's really strange to me how summer has retained this sort of sepia tone magic. And I'm always a bit sad when it nears an end. But the good part is that as someone who works in higher education and specifically medical school, the end of summer brings a new amazing group of people I can convince to be my friends. And today, we've got some real fresh faces, people. Listeners, say hello to Kylie Miller.
Hi, guys.
Yeah, there you go. It is an audio program.
I'm fangirling too hard right now.
Brady Campbell.
Yeah, hello.
Kyle Anderson.
How's it going, everyone?
All these folks are enrolled in the Introduction to Medical Education at Iowa program this summer and getting ready to don the short coat in just a couple of weeks. And we also have here Vivian Zhu, one of their teaching assistants and a second year medical student.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
All of you. I would like to know, first of all, maybe we can go around the table. We'll start with you, Brady, and maybe tell us where you're from and why you wanted to do IME.
All right. So I grew up in Des Moines, Iowa. So Iowa native.
Local boy.
Yep. Went here for undergrad too, but took a little time off and decided IMEI'd be a nice little introduction to get back into academics and meet a couple classmates before we hit it full bore in the fall.
Where'd you study?
Biochemistry.
Okay.
So I was actually around BSB and MRF a little bit, but not quite the anatomy stuff that we've even had this summer.
Got it. Kylie?
So I am an out-of-stater. I'm from California. The Central Valley looks a lot like Iowa, though. Lots of farms. And I went to school in Southern California at Westmont College. Then kind of took a little time off, did a post-bac at UC Davis in California, and then decided Iowa was the coolest place to be. So IMEI was a good chance to like test out the academic world and see if I needed to get kicked out, it was a little bit better to do it earlier on when there weren't as many people here to see it happen. So
wise.
Yeah.
So wise. What kind of farming do they do where you were from?
Pretty much everything. Mostly dairy, actually milk production, but strawberries, avocados, a lot of the nuts. Huge agricultural industry.
Most listeners will know that I'm not from Iowa. The fact that I asked that question just now, what kind of farming do you do? Just sort of says that I've been here a long time. Kyle.
I'm from the Western Twin Cities in Minnesota.
Okay.
I just graduated from Hope College in Holland, Michigan, on the west side of Michigan.
So you didn't have a break?
I didn't have a break. Yeah, I actually studied economics.
Okay.
So that was my big motivation for doing IME is I... Not like most students here, I didn't study biology or chemistry or biochemistry, so.
So I think we've hit on the two reasons, or the two main reasons why people do IME. Either they're a non-traditional student in that they did not go directly from college to med school, or they did, but they studied things that didn't have much to do with medicine initially. Did you have to, I mean, you must have had to take prerequisites and all that kind of stuff, so.
Yeah, so I took all the prerequisite classes in addition to my econ major. So,
with the intention of going to medical school?
Yeah, I had the intention from the beginning, but I always heard to just study something you're interested in. So yeah. I decided to take a different route. And Dave, I should mention that we just finished our last test today, so we're feeling pretty good.
Oh, yeah, right. I forgot to mention.
We've graduated from IMEI. So.
Congratulations.
And so didn't get kicked out.
Right.
Well, the dream.
Still early.
Vivian, you, did you do IME?
I did not.
Okay.
I graduated, similar to Kyle, last May, so 2015, and then went directly into medical school in the fall.
But, overachiever.
Well, or a baby, or both. But I really like teaching. I'm doing the teaching distinction track here, and being able to basically take this course and run it was a pretty unique experience, in my opinion. So I applied for the job, and they were crazy enough to take me.
Do you have a specific thing that you were
TAing for in IME? How does that work?
We basically run the whole course. The professors for every class except anatomy do most of the lecturing. Mm-hmm. For anatomy, we split up the lectures. So each of us had 4 or 5 lectures to give.
Vivian had all the hard lectures.
I purposely chose, I chose stuff that I liked. And then also I felt bad for not speaking up while we were choosing lectures at the beginning. So I took abdomen. I hate the abdomen, but.
They were basically our full-time babysitters. They took us class to class, taught our classes, made sure we ate lunch.
Yeah.
Reprimanded us when we were misbehaving.
We felt a little bit like parents, so I'm reconsidering having children now, but.
They picked the TAs really well. We kind of grouped them by Sean. He's a bit of an older, non-traditional student who definitely comes off as dad. Like, when you screw up, that's who you have to go own up to and, like, make it right. And then Sarah is, she's like the mom, caring, always has a smile on her face. Like, she will give you just this comforting feeling. And Vivian's like the cool older sister that's like going to tell you like it really is and, you know, take you out on the town. We haven't been out on the town together, but one day that's
You're
the
hoping.
Goal. Yeah. Buy Vivian a drink.
That's fantastic. So other than IME, how did you prepare yourself for medical school? Did you do anything intentional to prepare yourself for coming to medical school?
I can jump on that, I guess.
Yeah,
I've always kind of been interested in medicine. So I started working as a CNA as a freshman in college. So I worked as a CNA for about 3 years.
As a certified nursing assistant?
Yeah.
For those of us who don't know.
So took a couple classes and then started working at a hospital. So that was kind of my medical background. And then my other way of preparing was intentionally taking a year off. I just wanted a year away from things, wanted to pursue things I was interested in. So took that year, relaxed, and then could kind of come back refreshed and ready to go when medical school starts.
What about you, Kylie?
So I knew I wanted to do medicine very early on.
And how early?
Yeah, so I'm one of those, like, those embarrassing people who's, I was 4 years old and was like, I'm going to be a doctor.
And you never wavered.
I went through a rebellious phase in junior high, which I was insistent on becoming a tattoo artist, but I cannot draw to save my life, so it doesn't, like, not even a good stick figure.
Yeah, I hear that's important.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust tattooing myself,
so. Things are dashed.
They were, and then I came back to my senses kind
tattoo
of.
Tattoo artist.
Yeah.
Are we surprised, though?
And for the listeners, she has no visible tattoos now.
I do have a henna on my foot, which I did in procrastination of the cranial
nerves.
It looks
good. Maybe you could have had a career there.
Maybe.
If med school doesn't work out.
Which
but
there's
I think it will.
Still a high probability. But I went into undergrad majoring in biology and then got a C in gen bio. So for all of you people out there pulling C's in undergrad right now, you can still do it. But
I did that too.
Yeah. I ended up triple majoring in undergrad, getting a little distracted. And it only took me 4 years, but I had a good time of it. And then when it came around to looking at my GPA and applying to medical school, the first time I actually applied twice, I decided to do a post-bac, taking some more rigorous science courses and things like that. And it helped improve my GPA and kind of just my confidence going into it of like, oh, I'm capable of mastering material. I just need to actually try. So
a lot of stuff like this is about confidence, I think. You know, like, You're clearly not stupid people, right? You clearly can learn things, but sometimes it's about like understanding that you can actually do it. You know, just faking it till you make it.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite quotes from M1 year that kind of just made its way around was "Doubt kills more dreams than failure ever will," and a lot of it is being confident and knowing yourself really well, being confident in the things that you do have to offer and that you only. That you uniquely are able to do, and then also knowing, okay, I kind of suck at this and I should fix it, and then, you know, just move on from there.
Right.
So it's a nice balance, and I think IME helps with that a lot. I hope it helps with that.
Kyle, what do you do specifically to prepare?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. The impression I've gotten is that you hear that people say, if you want to go into medicine, you should do it because it's the only thing that you can see yourself doing. Mm-hmm. If you have any doubt, you should not do it just because it's such a big life-changing decision. So I was very intentional about trying to get experiences, whether it be through shadowing or through volunteering, to try and figure out if this is the career that I want to do. So it was shadowing clinicians, it was shadowing researchers, it was shadowing nurses all throughout different hospitals to try and figure out, is this something I could see myself doing on a day-to-day basis?
This whole doubt thing, I feel like we're going to come back to that.
Oh, yeah. It's a little dark.
I've had some rampant throughout med school, though.
Had some heart-to-hearts with the admissions committee, making sure that this wasn't an accident. And I poke into Amy's office every so often and be like, are you sure that you didn't, like, email the wrong person? And I found that that's a really kind of, like, pervasive thought through our IMEI group and people here talking about, well, why are we in IMEI? And that's sort of the question that comes up a lot. Like, what did you do in your time off? And people are just like, yeah, I'm still worried that the call wasn't meant for me.
Yeah, or every email you get from the admissions department is them emailing you saying, we're actually not accepting you. I shared that fear with a couple people.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about okay, so everybody knows medical school is hard. That goes without saying. But I'm not sure that everybody considers the way it's hard in addition to the amount of studying or work that you're going to have to do. And I'm talking here about the emotional intensity of medical school. Is that something you guys thought about before coming to medical school, or is that something that's dawning on you now?
I mean, Vivian here has the most experience having gone through 1 year of it and maybe seeing the emotional changes that it's taken on you or your classmates.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of self-challenge, and the easy thing to do, it kind of feels like high school all over again, where you have 150, 180. Yeah, well, a little bit better, I hope.
You can drink this time around.
Exactly.
Legally.
And, you know, I'm a little less awkward. I think there's just a lot of temptation to look around at all these amazing, wonderful people who come from backgrounds and experiences that you probably will never have or could never dream of having. I mean, I came straight out of undergrad, and I've talked to Kyle about this a little bit. We feel like babies, and I know that's not just us. I know a lot of my friends feel the same way, and it's just looking around at all these amazing human beings and just feeling like, how in the world did I end up here? I think takes a lot of, you have to learn about yourself a lot more. You have to get more comfortable with yourself to make it through that, because it's really easy when you're all taking the same classes, you're taking the same tests, you're together all the time. And so it's very easy to look around and compare yourself and say, like, well, where am I in relation to other people?
That's a big trap.
Yeah. Oh, it's a huge trap. And it's easy to do. It's even easier to do here, I think, than it is in most people's undergrads. You know, everyone has different majors. You take different classes at different times of the day. And so I don't go to lecture, so that helps a little bit. I like to sit in my bed and watch Panopto, our video recording system for lectures. But we still have small groups. We still all have the same test on the same day. And so, you know, you see people who get done really fast. You see people who sit there and take a longer time, but you know for a fact that they do really well, you know, stuff like that. And it's just easy to get lost in that and constantly be thinking, well, if my way's not working, maybe I'll look to my friend and see that. And that's a good thing. I think it's always good to be open to suggestion and open to new ideas, but you have to be careful, I think, in med school, because you have to realize that everyone is different and works differently. So for me, it was a lot of clarifying moments in the past year. Not so much change, like, emotionally or personality wise, but just becoming comfortable with stuff that I know is just my unique personality that isn't everybody's cup of tea. I'm so neurotic about a lot of things, like super OCD, and that's never going to change. That's just how I am, but I can make it work for me. And then there are also things that I can get better about. Like, I get really anxious about some things that don't need to be freaked out about. And so accepting that and looking for ways to work around it, I think, goes a long way towards not just making sure you do well in medical school, but also making you a good doctor, because you see that in your patients and you make sure that they can kind of work through that with their illness too.
There's another kind of emotional intensity that I think is coming, and that is working with patients is at times one of the more intense experiences. You know, if the first time you see somebody who comes into the ER who's not going to make it or who hasn't made it, when you start with your anatomy dissection experience, when you're working with a donated body. The first time you deal with a patient who's not doing well and who reminds you of someone you know, or who is someone you know. That can happen, especially if you're a local. And I hear about this sometimes, you know, it doesn't, I don't think it happens to everybody necessarily, but when it happens, it's a tremendously, it can be a traumatic experience. Is that something you guys thought of before? Is this news to you?
No, not really for me, coming from the CNA background. Mm-hmm. Before that, it wasn't something I had thought about. So the first time I kind of experienced some of those things you had talked about, whether it was a patient passing away, or luckily I never had to deal with anyone I personally knew. It hits you at first, and then in a weird way, it just becomes just a force of habit. You're still going to think about it every time it happens, but you have to be able to process it so that you can move on and then give the all you have to that next person you're working with. And I think that's something everyone learns with and deals with differently. So, I mean, that's why we have specialties. some people won't really ever have to deal with that if they don't want to. But then for other people who can handle that well, then they might excel a little more.
So as part of the program this summer, we got to kind of do an early on-ramping with the simulated patients mm-hmm. here. So they have what looks like a clinic. There, you know, are six different exam rooms, and this voice comes over the loudspeaker and tells you to go in. And you essentially...
It's like the Hunger Games.
You know,
actually, though.
Yeah.
Like, you're on this pedestal.
It really is.
You may now enter the room.
Yeah. And you are shaking this... you know, patient, air quotes, this patient's hand and introducing yourself as a medical student for the first time for, you know, most of us. And yeah. That's kind of a weird experience anyway, but they are very good, not necessarily actors, but they have gone through extensive training as a simulated patient on how to take in the case that they are presenting to you as a student, and they act it out very convincingly. And so, you know, one of the ladies that I was interviewing had, you know, her general complaint was chest pain, but it became evident very quickly that it was more of an anxiety and depression sort of manifestation. And she's telling me about the stressors in her life. And granted, this isn't even a real patient, and I am automatically like, you know, I want to take you home and I want to make it okay. And so they debrief with you after the interview is finished, after the voice on the loudspeaker tells you you can go back into normal person mode. And so I told her that, and she's like, you know, boundaries are one of the hardest things to have to do. And I'm a nurturer by nature. And if I find a stray animal, or, you know, I've taken on another IMEI student who, he's the youngest one in our class, and so I bring him snacks and I totally just use him as my nurturing pincushion. But creating creating these emotional boundaries.
Alex.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we sit next to each other in every lecture, and I'm like, here, have some grapes. Have you eaten today?
Some blood sugar.
So creating those boundaries with patients, I think, will be one of those experiences that, as time goes on, will become more standard. But for right now, it's still at the forefront of my mind. Yeah.
What about you?
I think, I mean, with respect to the doubt issue, I mean, sometimes when you're studying or when you're sitting through hours of lecture, you kind of think, gosh, why am I doing this? This is so much stuff. But at least for me, when we did the simulated patients, that's when I could really realize that, yeah, this is what I wanted to do. When it's just you and a patient in the room, and it's such like an
and
intimate
relationship. And a video camera.
Yeah,
and
a video camera.
They are filmed experiences.
Yeah, I try not to think about that.
And also, kind of with that, the respect, we got to go into clinics and shadow actual physicians for a little bit too. And we got our little badge that says student. And even the way these patients look at you when you have a badge that says student when you're shadowing, instead of just shadowing a physician like we all probably did before we applied, it's a whole different experience because they look at you like you know everything. And you have to build that trust with them somehow and also tell them you don't know anything.
Yeah. It's like, I just got an 83% on the test. I can assure you there's 17% of that material that I do not know, and I would not feel comfortable giving you this care right now.
I just think something that I realized the last year, there's kind of a wonderful duality about that emotional connection, I think, that medicine brings more than a lot of other professions, just because you want to feel for your patients. You want to be, I mean, even if you are a pathologist looking mostly at slides, I think there's something meaningful and necessary in remembering that there's a human being and a life behind those slides. But then at the same time, you know, you can't do your job if you don't have professional distance. And learning to balance that spectrum, I think, is really important, but also one of the most difficult things to do, because emotions are so primal to us as higher beings, I guess, compared to, I don't know, like rats or something. But
hey, rats are higher beings too. Yeah.
Kylie had a pet rat.
Cockroaches.
Ew. Yeah, okay. That's a good example. I don't think anybody likes cockroaches.
Well,
but
well done. Thank you.
We also had Irene sitting here the whole time. But sorry, she looks like she's about to leave. So
she's like, I'm so bored with you people.
We love you. Thank you for keeping us company.
Oh, yeah. So I in the eyes come up with a little, I won't call
this
it a gang sign, but it's...
Kylie came up with it.
No, I actually did not. Somebody else did. I'm just...
I don't believe that for
I'm
a
just
second.
Propagating this
it's
cool hand signal.
It's not universally embraced.
So when orientation becomes awkward and we're suddenly surrounded by 160 other students who are lost and as panicked
the
as
outsiders.
We were 6 weeks ago, we've got this cool little allusion to an anatomy concept to unite
God,
us.
God, we're nerds.
Oh.
I didn't know about any
great
of this
though.
Stuff.
It's not real.
It's called the Keep, Kyle, in the, yeah. the dark call.
Do you have any heroes or mentors or personal cheerleaders who helped you get here? Or did you do it all by yourself?
Yeah, I call myself Miss Independent. I will not rap on the air.
So self-sufficient.
Yeah, actually, I kind of have an interesting story about this. The big reason for me of wanting to go into medicine was I developed a chronic disease. I have type 1 diabetes. And I got that when I was 16. And
wow.
I ended up being hospitalized for it for a couple of days and really got to experience the difference between a good clinician and a not so good clinician.
It's amazing.
It really does make a huge difference. Yeah. You know, what are the things that make a clinician effective is that they're willing to listen. They're willing to kind of understand what your goals are. They're willing to just work with you and take the time that they need to accomplish what you need to do, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So there was one endocrinologist that I saw who really wasn't supportive of my goals of just doing the things that a young kid would want to do, like do a lot of travel and be active in sports. And I was able to have another endocrinologist who ended up doing the same things as me, like a lot of running, a lot of outdoor activities.
So somebody who had the same condition
yeah.
as you?
Yeah. So she okay. actually, she was a type 1 diabetic yeah. too. And that was kind of the spark for me. It was yeah. that it gave the clinicians so much more credibility when they know what it's like to be a patient and they've experienced kind of being on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
So it's that patient rapport.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's pretty important.
So I think you guys actually had one of my heroes on the podcast a few months back, and that was, I mean, I was fangirling even harder then than I was when I met Dave. But
now wait a minute.
Yeah. Please.
Yes, Paul Farmer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was just, I have spent some time in Haiti and his work there and just in the public health sphere in general, as the most kind of caring and brilliant clinician you could ever meet, that just kind of sparked who I wanted to be as a doctor and as a larger citizen in a community and a worldwide citizen. So I think just taking in his kind of his perspective on what medicine should be outside of just a clinic or outside of, you know, books and engaging with people. That was definite inspiration for me.
By the way, that was from January 28th, 2016. You're going to
go back into the archives.
Go back into the archives.
Dig it up.
Shameless plug.
Y'all should take a listen and read. There's a book on his life and his career, Mountains Beyond Mountains. That's a great book to pick up and do some summer reading.
It was a fantastic episode.
Thank but you. I did not do
Dave
anything.
Is blushing.
I was not even on the episode. They're just the students did it all.
Is there a relation there?
Oh.
Dave, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So I get the sense that you have some of the same people on the podcast. Every once in a while, they like to come back. So mm-hmm. from some of the students that you had on the show at the beginning of their medical school career towards the very end, how have you seen them change?
And are we going to be more successful because we've come on the show already?
Right.
Gunners,
oh,
all of you, such gunners.
I just want to say that the word gunner is used way too loosely in these parts. And
it really is.
It implies
true.
Sabotage of others.
I think Brady's about as far away from a gunner as you can
I
get.
I know, this is true.
I don't know.
I'm
that
just
Vivian, though, I don't know.
I think that people have remained pretty steady in who they were from beginning to end. That being said, for a lot of people, they get too busy in their clinical years to have a really strong presence on the show, although I hang out with them in other, you know, basically they come and visit or whatever. I don't think people change that much. I think what changes is, you know, the level of intensity that they end up experiencing, that sort of changes their perspective a little bit. I'll tell you what, though, as far as like being on what being on the show does,
get to the interesting part.
I can tell you that it becomes something that is helpful to you when you are going out on the interview trail. Not because it provides you with an extra skill or anything like that. It provides you with something to talk about. If you put the show...
That's never my problem. If you
things Kylie
to talk
is
about.
Always talking.
Kylie was the only... We took a personality assessment, I think, the second week of IME. And out of the four of us here, I think she's the only one who...
Extrovert.
Got extrovert. Probably. Is that right?
I was introvert.
I'm an introvert.
Absolutely.
We kind of invited her on just so that we didn't have to talk as much.
Yes, this is true.
Do you know, the first week I burst into Dave's office and was like, I want to be on this podcast.
He's like, take me, Hollywood, I'm here. but what I meant was, here's my theory. I think it's true. When you are going to interview for residency positions, there's a massive group of people who are interviewing for the same job you are, and they have all done the same things.
Everyone poops.
Everybody poops. A fan favorite.
You know, they've all
pooped. Okay.
They've all done service.
Number one.
Hopefully more than once.
I'm really gonna try to move on from that.
What was the phrase?
Hopefully not in the interview.
Don't edit this.
I'm keeping that in. They have all done service. They have all, you know, many of them have had teaching experiences. They have all done research. They have all done, you know, all this kind
Stop.
Of stuff.
This is me in 3 years. Stop. This is terrifying.
But when you have on your CV, you know, I've done the Short Code podcast. It's not the Short Code podcast in particular that you've done that makes you interesting. It's the fact that you've put yourself out there and that you have been a part of something that a lot of people haven't seen on people's applications. I think that is one of the values of doing the show.
I think we should mention that, what was it, 2 days ago, we were all just mingling in the hallway and we saw Dave walk by and said, hey, Dave, can we be on the podcast?
And I was like, oh, yeah.
Hey, Elwood Friday.
Dave's been trying to rope me in for months.
I have, because I thought she had a good voice.
Thank you.
And she seems...
She does. It puts me right to sleep in lecture.
I've always maintained that I'm the most boring lecturer, so...
No, on leg day, she made a real, like, intention to wear shorts so that we could see the muscle definition and point out, there's that biceps femoris there.
What were the biggest barriers for you in getting here, do you think?
Ooh, Dave's going deep. I think I'll step in. I was a first-generation college student, and so getting over that hump of even just how to go from high school into college, moving out of, you know, out of my home, out of my community, to something that was very different from, you know, the farm area that I had grown up in, and not necessarily ever having to put in that much effort to get good grades in public school, into college, not really knowing how to study there and seeing that translate a little bit into my stumbling through the first four years of college, if we're honest, and not having a role model or somebody even just to speak in and say, here's what you do, here's when you take the MCAT, here is, you know, activities that look good on medical school applications. I relied heavily upon, you know, certain dirty little online forums and other people's experiences to kind of navigate those things. But thankfully, I wound up at a smaller private college and there was a little bit more hands-on guidance, but I really feel for those... I feel for those undergraduate students at bigger universities who don't really have that guidance. It's important to reach out to mentors and someone who has been through it and can kind of give you the honest face-to-face kind of help.
Yeah, we've talked about this on the show before, actually, when Teneme was on the show with a bunch of minority meds, or pre-meds. Reaching out to mentors was one of the things that somebody brought up on the show, like, as being really important. And if you're a pre-med listener and you're thinking, oh, they don't want to hear from me, they want to hear from you. Like, they, not only do they want to hear from you, they have office hours specifically to hear from you. So, you know, go and reach out to people, reach out to mentors. People love to help pre-meds and, you know, want to do that with you.
Got to pay it forward.
Take
somebody helped us
and then be that mentor later.
Yeah, and think, oh gosh, I crammed all of this information about med school applications into my head and now it's just sitting there unused. So tap this.
Yeah. Well, good. What barriers have you guys experienced? Anything?
The biggest barrier for me was probably making the decision at such a young age about, do I really want to go all the way through with medicine? It takes a lot of introspection and thinking about your skills and what you're good at, because you never, as much as you can shadow and you can experience healthcare, you can never really know as soon as you get through your rotations, am I going to like this? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can be pretty sure, but you can never be 100% sure. So for me, the biggest barrier was to just realize at some point you just have to go all in and realize that this is what you want to do. It takes some courage to do. Yeah,
it really is all
it does.
In.
It's a long road.
I mean, not only is it like an expensive affair to go to medical school, but it's a big chunk of your life. I mean,
yeah,
it's no small commitment.
Yeah. It's, I mean, when you're pre-med, you convince yourself that once you get to med school, you'll be fine. And we haven't even started, and now everyone's already convinced us that getting here is the easy part, and now we have to commit to residency. So I think it's a little bit of just a lifelong commitment. But
any barriers for you, Vivian?
No, I just sailed right through. I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding.
I knew that.
I mean, I actually went into college as an architecture major. My mother wanted me to be a doctor growing up, so of course I ran in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
Rebellion.
Yep, that's my middle name.
Love you, mama.
And yeah, she's not listening to this. I'm not gonna let her. I don't know. I think for me, it was a lot of confidence, I don't want to call it self-esteem, but just self-confidence, I guess. And I still struggle with that a lot, just in terms of there's a psychological term called imposter syndrome out there.
Yeah.
And I believe that all good med students and physicians and pretty much anybody who's good at their job, I think, has a little bit, because it keeps you humble and it keeps you wary of things.
And striving to be better.
Yeah. I mean, I think it, like, you know, you never get satisfied with yourself. You never get complacent. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you have to get over that a certain extent if you're going to have confidence to talk to a patient and ask the hard questions, or go into a test where you're like, well, crap, like, I know some stuff, but maybe some other stuff I'm gonna have to figure out in the fly. And part of that is, it's still hard for me, for sure. I get terrified every time I have to talk to a patient. I get terrified. I got terrified every single day I had to talk to these guys.
Pretty scary.
That was accurate.
Tell me she hates people.
Like, when you go in to see a patient, do you, like, intentionally go, I'm going to pretend to be a knowledgeable person now?
Usually I'm trying to pretend to not be awkward. Or I'm trying to pretend to be normal so that I'm not awkward.
Okay, well, you just failed.
Exactly. But this is my point, right? No, I don't know. I don't know. People are scary. They're really scary. Mm-hmm. I don't like them. I've told these guys every day.
Hence, she's going into surgery.
Maybe.
Vivian, I thought about that when we actually had the chance to meet some of the deans here, and we did an introduction where everyone went around and said something that was different or unique about them. And you realize that each person here is bringing something different to the table, and everyone else has something about them that's just really impressive or really cool. So you're right. Sometimes you can think, gosh, what do I have to bring to the table?
Right.
But you always... It's a trap to compare yourself to other people.
Yeah, I mean, you have things that nobody else has, and even the combination of strengths and weaknesses that you have, almost nobody else, probably, unless you have a clone out there somewhere. But yeah.
I do.
Do you? That's creepy. Yeah. That's weird.
Well, don't they say that somewhere on this planet, everybody has one person that, like, looks just like them?
I used to be a bus driver. Here's my story about that. I used to be a bus driver, and a city bus driver.
I could
driver.
See that.
Yeah. Well, I used to actually train people to drive buses, which is the scariest thing.
A lot of people train out there who should not have their license.
Train 18-year-old college students to be bus drivers.
Oh,
anyway, so I was driving one day, and I got home from work one day. I was sitting on the couch, and my roommate walked in, and his jaw hit the floor. He's like, "What are you doing here? I just now jumped up and down in front of a bus thinking that you were driving it, and you're,
oh no, so
even within my own small organization there was somebody who apparently looked just like me.
Oh man,
I see kids driving buses around here that look like they're about 16.
They get paid really well. It's scary.
$13 an hour
if you need a job.
Sean got really mad about that. One of the other TAs was a paramedic for several years, and I $15 an hour is what they got, and these bus drivers get 13 and they're like 18 years old. Anyway, what were we talking about?
Anyway, are you prepared for the decline in empathy that you might experience as a med student and resident? Have you heard about this?
I think you can tell when you talk to some older kids. I mean, there is some, you get a sense that some people are jaded, but
for sure.
I think most people here have some intrinsic motivation besides just I'm a strong academic, or I enjoy science or something. So I'm hoping that that motivation is kind of what keeps you from becoming jaded. But
I think it's unavoidable, but not on a personality level. You know, like you might end up snapping at a patient or brushing them off or speaking ill of them behind their back, unfortunately. But we're all human, right? Mm-hmm. So as long as that doesn't become who you are, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like it's unavoidable, but if you're mindful about it, you can
I think that's probably a key.
But it's hard to be mindful.
And I think on some level, it's not developing, you know, less empathy or this cynicism for healthcare in so much as that, you know, or because we get tired of patients and we hate it. But part of it is a personal protection mechanism.
Yes.
That there are so many heartbreaking things that we will see day in and day out, and kind of just this how society kind of pulls people down, especially, you know, lower SES or women or the LGBTQ communities, and the strife that's happening in this nation right now. You know, we get jaded because some of it hurts too much to confront daily in the clinic, in the hospital. And you want to, like I said, I wanted to take that simulated patient home with me and just make everything better. And we can't do that.
You can't always make things better. I think that's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it could be even less a loss of empathy and more just a different way of processing. If you continue to process on this level where you deeply care about everything, you're gonna be so drained that you wouldn't even be able to get up in the morning. So you might not lose the empathy. You just have to express it in different ways that might come across as more jaded.
Mm-hmm. Who here applied to UW-Madison?
Nope.
Nobody. Yes.
No.
You did?
I did. Yeah.
Oh boy!
Oh, hot seat now.
Because
what happened there?
Apparently, UW-Madison. So med schools, as you know, accept more people than they have room for, figuring that people will drop out and they'll end up with the number that they need in the end. UW-Madison was so popular this year, apparently, that they ended up with an extra 20 students who opted to enroll and who they didn't have room for. Just can't take them. There's no room. So they offered them $25,000 scholarships to defer for a year.
Holy
crap.
Sign me up.
And Kyle's going to
leave. Is that
us
a one time scholarship or is that a recurring?
It's a one time scholarship, but still, $25,000. Nothing to be.
That's a lot.
Nothing to be. So I hope you didn't get in, dude.
I hope he didn't get in either.
He could travel the world and then still come away with some money.
We want him here.
I have a friend who applied to Michigan State this year, interviewed on the later end and was waitlisted. Mm. And rather than just get accepted outright, they offered him admission for next year.
Huh.
So, which is kind of nice if you think about the people. Maybe they're not allowed to, and I'm exposing their dirty secrets. But
they're fellow Big Ten, we can take them down.
Yeah.
A lot of people are on a waiting list at, you know, one school, two schools, and are having to resubmit their AMCAS applications
and pay
for that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I feel for them. That is just the worst.
Yeah. I've heard that's a strategy that schools will do, is that they'll admit more than they know they're going
to
take.
Oh, they
and
have
then,
to.
And then they do that with the intention of, we're going to try and keep as many talented candidates as we can, so we're going to offer some people scholarships. They'll do that instead of going to a wait list. But
I suppose that's a thing, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure, but I mean, they no matter what, they have to over-enroll so that when people finally make their decisions, they have a viable class.
But think for next year, they've got 20 less spots that you're interviewing for at their program. Interview to Iowa.
Yeah, don't
apply
expect to
get
into
instead.
Madison next year.
I was better anyway. We've always known that.
True that.
But aren't they like the Badgers or something?
Yes.
That's a pretty cool mascot. Like,
Is it though?
I like Badgers.
I don't think I've ever seen a badger.
I have a thing for small rodents.
Yeah. I'll take a hawk.
Are badgers small? I don't think they're very small.
So I was just told that the Hawkeyes aren't even a real bird, right?
A hawk is?
A hawk.
Well, then why is it a hawk eye?
It's a hawk eye. It's the eye of a hawk. Have you been paying attention in anatomy?
That seems like an odd...
Do you even know what color it is?
The eye. Yellow? No, it's one okay. wants to be friends with the California girl now, but
Kylie, there's a lot of California
Kylie, it's
people
okay, because I cannot stand, I've talked about it before, I cannot stand sports. I don't understand them. I don't understand how they work. I don't understand why they exist. I don't understand. And being here in Iowa.
Yeah, college football town.
Yeah.
It's not... It's,
Iowa State, the Cyclones. What is that? Like, you are a natural disaster for your mascot. Oh. That's something to be proud of.
Pretty powerful.
Go to California, on the other hand, we've got banana slugs and anteaters and...
And Aggies.
Yeah.
What are Aggies?
A Mustang is like the real thing that parades around at baseball, football. And there's no cheerleaders at baseball games, but football and basketball at least.
Well, yeah.
Got off topic.
I don't even... No, that's okay. That's what we do.
We've lost all the listeners at this point.
It's okay, as long as they tuned in for a little bit, right?
Unsubscribe.
So, yeah, I think that's actually a good place to close out the show today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having
guys.
Us, Dave.
Thanks, Dave. I hope that you'll come back, because I just lost a whole bunch of people who graduated, and that's I need more people. So
we're your second choice.
Well,
thank
second
you.
Stringers.
No.
was that Rob that called us the B team on the way in?
Yes.
That was
Tony.
Tony.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, he's a
good
guy.
He's a great guy. He plays the saxophone.
Is that...
Did you not know that?
I did not know that.
Oh, you got to get him to like perform or something.
Yeah, if you can get Mark making balloon animals on air, which is not the most pleasant sound. I'm not.
Did you enjoy?
You can play the saxophone.
Did you enjoy the audio of Mark making balloon animals?
It was an experience, that's for sure.
I listened to that show. I went back and listened because I was curious, and I went back and listened to that show on Stitcher. Which, if you don't know how podcasts work, you know, usually, when you're listening to a podcast, you download the original file to your machine. Stitcher compresses the file and then serves it to you from your own server. So Stitcher made it sound excruciating. Fortunately, almost nobody listens to us on Stitcher, it turns out.
I do.
Oh, you do? Really? Yeah, that's what I was listening to it on. I'm like, oh my God, that sounds terrible. Anyway,
that's hilarious.
Note to future podcasters. Balloon animals don't work. Thank you very much for hanging out with us today, listeners. If you like what you hear, go to iTunes, whether you use it or not, and give us a review. The reviews there help us grow the show. And as always, we're listening everywhere. If you want to comment on anything these guys said today, then send us an email at theshortcoats@gmail.com or visit us at theshortcoat.com/tell us, where we've got a number of ways to get in touch with us. So the show is made possible by a generous donation from College of Medicine Student Government and the Writing and Humanities Program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our editor and engineer is Aline Sanduk. Our opening music is by Dr. Vox, and our closing music is by Agrafox. Talk to you in 1 minute.